Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
The way of the samurai is found in death. Meditation on inevitable death should be performed daily. Every day when one's body and mind are at peace, one should meditate upon being ripped apart by arrows, rifles, spears, and swords. Being carried away by surging waves, being thrown into the midst of a great fire, being struck by lightning, being shaken to death by a great earthquake, falling from 1,000-foot cliffs, dying of disease, or committing seppuku at the death of one's master.
Jeez.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. This is episode 644. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. Last time I messaged him by bird, he ate my message Dunaway.
And it was tasty. Should have read it first. Oh, hi.
Hi.
This week on Film Sack, we really ghost dog it when we seek to learn the way of the samurai after an HBO Max Max Mafia made man earns our loyalty by saving us from the mean streets of this 1999 crime thriller that is obviously trying to kill us with ancient gobbledygook parallels to modern city crime. Oh, no, not today, city built on stereotypes and bird shit. Not today. Anywho. I think the way of the samurai may need an addendum on the complete modern samurai experience, like how to eat something other than chocolate ice cream from the back of a truck and rolls of pasture pigeon notes from the foot of a bird. Good for you? Nah, just nasty. Also, might want to include how to pay some rent with your autumn money instead of living rent-free on the roof of a city building in a pigeon poop lean-to that I'm sure smells just lovely. And finally, maybe insert something on how to call an Uber instead of Grand Theft Auto with a remote control everything device. Beep, beep, boop. Ghost dog. Randy, it is bad when one thing becomes two. Unless it's a red tracksuit, then it becomes worse.
Yeah. It becomes three at that point.
Yeah.
Nicely done. As always, let's now move over to Randy. Film Sack only pays him the first day of autumn, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian,
Randy.
Thank you for coming to this rooftop meeting where we speak in different languages and we're incompatible. So we have to gawk at the guy in the next building who's rubbing his boat. That is not a euphemism. Today, we're going to learn the ways of the New Jersey samurai, or maybe it's the Yonkers samurai. I don't really know. And all I know is, when I steal a car, I have to drive it all night long to get it anywhere in this city. By the way, always wear marching band gloves. Marching band gloves. I don't know why I said it that way. Always wear marching band gloves when you're stealing things. And always take a magic box that makes cars start and open security gates with just the push of a button. Those things come in handy. Also, follow my three serious rules. Number one, exit your shack house and bow to your porch light. Practice with your katana. Practice with a tanto knife that you never actually use later, even though you could have made it into Chekhov's tanto knife. But no, It's Tonto Knife in a Bucket. Number two, surround yourself with animals, birds, dogs, bears. They're all your friends, and they're all going to get killed so that you can get revenge. You are welcome. Number three, after you kill most of the people, and you're sure there's still one or two hunting you, and they're going to kill you back, unload your gun. You heard me. Unload your gun. Death is the only way you're going to get any peace and quiet around here.
That's a damned truth. All right.
So true.
With us finally, Brian, his best friend only speaks French a bit.
Hey, that's all. Ice cream. It's good for you.
So, you know, I try to surprise people. I don't try to go with the obvious thing. I don't try to be like, you know, oh, hey, the movie is Silverado. Brian's going to do Desperado. No, he's not. Or the movie's
Kung Fu Fighting.
Exactly. Right.
Why the disclaimer here?
Well, because for this one, I went obvious. I kind of did the song that everybody said, oh, Ghost Dog. I know exactly what song Brian is going to do. So let's go ahead and get to it. It's kind of obvious, you know.
Once I hear it, I'll probably get it. But right now, I have no idea.
Yeah, well, clearly, you think Ghost Dog, you think the Macarena. So.
Way of the samurai is to read the Hagakure. Meditate on your death every day to be sure. Decide in seven breaths and keep your mind super pure. Read the Hagakure. Don't treat this book like it's a samurai brochure. Keep some powdered rouge up your sleeve and we'll ensure that you'll die with honor and not take the dark detour. Read the Hagakure. The Hagakure says that it's a no-brainer. You follow your master if you're a retainer. Devote yourself and don't be a complainer, or else you'll find yourself in a container. The Hagakure is the path you will be led. And when it rains, you'll still get soaked, it said. Make a bonus action if you lose your head. Every day you must consider yourself dead. Just watch over your pigeons and don't take a paramore. Take an angel because you're an entrepreneur. Be the hawk that marks a bird and you'll be so secure. Read the Hagakure. The way of the samurai is to read the Hagakure. Meditate on your death every day to be sure. Decide in seven breaths and keep your mind super pure. Read the Hagakure.
Yeah, I quit.
I'm out, dude. That is amazing. Hold on. So, you know what the other vibe I got out of that, and it's weird. It's like the Bare Naked Ladies did a cover of that song. your cadence in that song is very those guys.
Well, you know what? Now that you say that, the Ed Robertson parts of 1 Week are kind of like that. And 1 Week was one of the songs I was considering, and it would be like, you know, I do the Stephen Page part kind of straightforward, but then the Ed Robertson, it would be basically the Hagakure done as a rap song. And that seemed like way too many lyrics. And then I realized, no, this way actually is a lot of effing lyrics as well.
Yeah, that's a lot, dude. That was amazing. I don't know how you better that one. I've said this before and you've done it. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Peaked. Yeah. You may have peaked, but I'm guessing you'll surprise us and peak again. You'll peek again.
Well, so this is
to watch my YouTube channel for the video where I demonstrate the dance that goes along with this.
Oh nice.
My God. I'm totally kidding. There is zero way that I'm going to do that.
It has been promised. It should be delivered.
You should do like, you got to flip a gun around like a sword and put it in your pants.
That's what I was thinking. Flip a little sword thing, do a little, get on a rooftop somewhere, do the Forest Whitaker.
Yeah.
Actually, the YouTube video should just be that on a loop with this song in the background.
Yeah.
Sign me up. I'm in.
There's a Forest Whitaker song. You guys ever heard that one?
By Forest Whitaker or about?
No. It is a song about Forest Whitaker, and I'm trying to remember who sings it. Hold on a second. I'll find it. Go ahead.
All right,
Keep moving along.
I'll play it a little.
Interesting that you brought up. You started with your disclaimer because clearly you have to have a process to do things this creative.
Yeah,
and I'm just curious about. You watch the movie, obviously. You have to watch the movie before you can start this.
Well, 9 times out of 10, there are some times that I know the song I'm doing and have even most of the lyrics done before I've even seen the movie, but I've seen it before. So it's, I have to have at least seen the movie.
Do you have an example for that? Like one that you did recently, or it's like you're already.
Silverado made Scott Johnson cry. I had a lot of that written before I saw the movie, and I hadn't seen that movie since it first came out.
Wow.
This song made me forget about that song. That's how good good it was.
Yeah.
Wow. So, that's amazing.
So this particular movie, though, is like made in conjunction with a certain kind of music, a certain music group, if you will. And they like
one in the credits.
It's so infused with this music group that we literally have a scene at the near the end of the movie where the main character and the leader of the music group encounter each other on the street and kind of like praise each other quietly, quietly, like look into each other's eyes and agree, "You're great." Yes. "No, you're great." That is such an awesome scene to me.
It is. I'm just
curious, like, did you think about maybe a little late 90s East Coast rap?
How could you avoid it?
Yeah, I thought rap. Listen, if I do a rap song, it's probably going to be like a play on "Hi, my name is," you know, Eminem kind of thing. I don't think I can go, you know, dark. But it's got to be funny. It's got to be a little bit of tongue in cheek. Like, if you know, my thinking is I can do. I could do Careless Whisper as a parody, but I probably couldn't do Freedom 90 as a parody.
Oh,
because
exactly.
There has to be a little bit of a cheese factor involved in the original song, or at least a wide appreciation for the song.
Yeah. Even if its content is a little sad or sully or whatever, right. you can twist it because of its well-knownness, right? Like, yes, had you used Desperado for Silverado, it would have worked because everybody knows that song, even though it's kind of a sad, like, melancholy song, you would have made great parody with it. That's interesting look at your process.
But I probably couldn't do a Seven Bridges Road. You know, I could do, Eagles songs, it's like, all right, Life in the Fast Lane, perfect, great. Bring on the movie, I could do it. Whatever the movie is, I could fit it to that song.
Sure.
This is a terrific metaphor for us picking film sack movies, because there are all kinds of movies where we're just not, it's hard to get started, like even talking about watching it, you know, like you just like you come across a movie and you're like, oh, there's just like something, there's something about like in the air of a movie, you know?
Yeah.
Where we've had that problem where we've thought during the week after somebody watches the movie, they're like, oh my God, I don't know how we're going to talk about this. And we've either vetoed it or we've said, this is going to be a week where we know that we're going to talk a little bit about the movie, but a lot about other movies.
Yeah.
Are we going to even talk about what movie this is?
Yes, we are. This movie is called Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai. My first viewing. I think a lot of our first viewings. I think
my first viewing as well.
Yeah.
Had anybody seen this? Any of the four of us seen it before?
I'd only heard of it like whenever somebody was listing Jim Jarmusch movies. I'd be like, I've heard the name. I had a vague idea that Forest Whitaker was in it, but until we, you know, came on the end of this week, I'd never really.
He stood up for the Oscars last week to be one of the best actor dudes, this is the movie that he got
best
it for.
Actor dude.
And I'd never seen it and I always was curious because I like him a lot. Like, I think Forest Whitaker is just fascinating actor in everything. I was always like, oh, I should always watch that Ghost Dog. But Jim Jarmusch movies, boy, they're real hit and miss for me. They're like, some are really long for no good reason and are just weird for no good reason and not in a good way. Not like a, you know.
I'd even go so far as to say they're miss, hit, miss. Like, it's about a 25% for me that I'm going to like a Jim Jarmusch movie. And I don't know. I think it's that he's so far in his head that that what he creates is beautiful and thought provoking, but almost requires a little bit of a, I like it because it's a Jim Jarmusch approach to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
What I love about this guy is that he makes a movie that is steeped in theming. Like, there's theming all over the movie. And then when people ask him about it, he's like, you're reading too much into this.
Yeah,
I thought it would look cool to have everybody always watching cartoons. Don't ask for deeper than that.
Oh, no way. No way did he not figure out which cartoon would foreshadow the.
He'll claim it.
The only thing that he put really any much thought into was that we were implying that the gangster's daughter was going to continue on because her cartoons of choice were still the same Itchy and Scratchy, which is a derivative of all of the violent cartoons before it. But I don't think you should. I did that. I was trying to read way too much into it. As soon as they started quoting the Way of the Samurai, or the book, whatever it's called. As soon as they started quoting that, I was like, oh, there's going to be direct parallels here. And everything he says is either going to have just happened or is about to happen in the film. And lots of times I was like, oh, that was interesting, but it doesn't really connect.
It's not 100%. Yeah, it's not one for one. Yeah. And so it throws you off a little bit. But it's also just my assumption all these years was I was going to like whatever he won his Oscar for, that being Forrest Whitaker. But I thought the movie was probably going to be not my thing.
Right.
Because like I said, Jarmusch is an acquired taste, whatever. I think he's super interesting in real life. Like I loved his little role on What We Do in the Shadows a couple of seasons ago.
Oh, yeah.
It's very funny. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't sure about it. I am sad that it took this long, because I'll tell you right now, before we play the fake Fletcher and all that, I think this movie's awesome. I really like this movie a lot.
I think this movie is interesting. Very interesting watch.
Yeah.
I would go, yeah, I think I might be, I got to hear more from Dunaway, right. But I might be leaning more Dunaway than Johnson.
Yeah, I don't, when I say awesome, I don't mean like, hey, look at this spectacle. It's not like that. What I like about it is, I didn't know it was basically almost a parody mob story.
Yeah, like Italian, I was not expecting the humor.
Yeah, the Italian mobsters were my favorite part, because they were so on the stereotype nose of
Italian. Oh my gosh.
To the point that it didn't feel like an accident. That felt on purpose to me. Like to
it
really
had to be. They did everything but say, forget about it.
And they were all overweight, pasta eating, freaking, you know.
Yeah, it was the end of their era, right? That was kind of the implication. They were at the end. They
exactly. Yeah. They're not even in an Italian restaurant anymore. It's a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The first couple of times.
While complaining about Chinese people.
Yeah. Yeah. The first couple of times they went into the back room, and these three aging gangsters are all sitting shoulder to shoulder at a one person table. I was laughing. I was laughing out loud.
Yeah, that cracked me up. But that stuff I really like. There's a lot to say about it. Let's let fake Fletcher explain. You may recognize this voice. It's our very own Chuck Robinson calling in this week with this week's description. Here you go.
Ghost Dog. A hitman who lives by the code of the samurai, works for the mafia, and finds himself in their crosshairs when his recent job doesn't go according to plan. Now he must find a way to defend himself and his honor while retaining the code he lives by. Warning, this movie contains no ghost, though there is a dog who has the same stare as Forrest Whitaker.
My kid, I didn't realize it was R-rated. And I was saying to my kid, hey, do you want to watch this movie with me? And he's like, sure. And then I said, it's called Ghost Dog. And he's like, no, I'm out.
That is hilarious. Just based on the title.
Yeah, he genuinely thought it was about a dead dog.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Thankfully, no dog.
Another crying movie.
Yeah, thankfully, no actual dog dies in the film. Only the titular ghost dog himself.
The ghost dog.
Yeah,
but he was a ghost already, right? That was the idea. He's living on borrowed time. Everything that happens in his life is thanks to the person who saved him, because he was dead otherwise. He is a walking dead man. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Now,
I kind of dug that part.
Do we want to talk about the RZA thing first? Let's get this out of the way. Because I already said
this was made in like concert with a music troupe, and that music troupe is Wu-Tang Clan.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that either going into it. I thought some of it was really cool. Some of it was very weird, but also it felt like Jarmusch weird. So it didn't bother me. But I also just came off of Poor Things, and Poor Things had the strangest soundtrack. It was so
It did have a really
odd.
Yeah.
And I was kind of in the mood for that. And so I think maybe that helped color my appreciation for it. I always forget RZA has anything to do with Wu-Tang Clan, and that, you know, look at this white guy over here misunderstanding the Klan. But
you're more of a Ghostface Killah kind of guy.
I guess so.
Right. That was my era.
East Coast, West Coast, whatever. But I thought it was odd, but it worked for me overall. And
it
I'm curious what
so
you think.
It was so damn repetitive that it didn't add any musical interest. That first the intro music with the keyboard that basically goes repeats the same pattern, not even really a melody, because it's the same three keys being held down. Blink, 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 blink.
Yeah.
And it's repeated for about 6 minutes. I should have timed it.
Yeah.
And it, because it doesn't change, you don't feel like it's giving any sort of setup for the establishing shot of New York that it's giving, right? We're getting this kind of panning through the streets of New York. And I think New York. I assume New York.
It's supposed to be New Jersey, according to the trivia.
Oh, that's right. Jersey City. That's right.
Supposed to be.
And it's it is really just, and maybe that's the point. It's like nothing ever changes here in Jersey City. So the music is going to reflect that nothing ever changes. But it was almost distractingly repetitive. I want the music to kind of support the stuff I'm looking at and not be, oh, wow, is this thing ever going to change? It's really just the same chord being repeated, the same pattern. I like Wu-Tang Clan. I like their stuff, and I don't want to not like this, but I don't like this.
I kind of liked it, at least that one part, because it allowed me to kind of just almost get hypnotized. You know what I mean? Because it was repetitive, and so it didn't bother me. But yeah, I can certainly understand.
This is like this movie has a Criterion Collection version, and as a result of that, we get a tremendous amount of backstory, like. That you can go watch all of this making of this movie. And I did a little bit. And big part of it is the people asking Jim Jarmusch, like, what's the creation of the movie? Like, where do you start making this movie? And he's like, I'm sitting around all throughout the 90s listening to Wu-Tang Clan albums. And they're like, what albums? He goes, Enter the Wu-Tang, Wu-Tang Forever, Only Built for Cuban Links. And you're like, Only Built for Cuban. Jim Jarmusch was listening to Only Built for Cuban Links. Okay. I get it. And he's like, so I start writing this movie based on Hagakure. And he's like, and I'm listening to Wu-Tang music. And I realize I got to call up RZA. Like, it's just a really straightforward story. The making of this movie, you know, it's not like there's some real magic here.
We're trying to find magic. He does claim, Jarmusch, at least in this trivia here, claims that he's in an interview that he wrote the entire role for Forrest Whitaker. And had he not taken it, it probably wouldn't have been made.
If Forrest Whitaker has this ability to do something that should be stupid and ridiculous, I should be looking at him and laughing at him on the rooftop, you know, doing his little samurai moves and stuff. But he just makes me believe it. This guy's making me believe it. I love it.
Yep.
I love it.
I kind of was, that's what I liked about it too. He brought an authenticity to the role that worked really well. Even though most of the movie, again, is a little surreal, a little cartoonish. And I don't just mean the cartoons they watch, but
because of the cartoons.
But the you know, the on purpose tropiness of the Italian mob and then his role in there as a contracted hitman and, I like hitman movies in general.
Yes.
Like, kind of a fan. So I was like, oh, sweet. I didn't even know that's what this was about. I thought this was just my memory of the whole thing before seeing it was, oh, this is about a guy who's crazy. He's crazy. He thinks he's a samurai, but he lives on the street.
Well, and it's funny because Roger Ebert's review, this was before Roger Ebert passed away, gave a review of this and said, I think the movie works better. Yeah. Think the movie works better. Ghost reviewer.
Red Ghost reviewer.
This movie works better if you consider Ghost Dog to be a little bit crazy being this kind of like, right, exactly. Having a completely different.
Kind of like The Fisher King.
Kind of,
not
there you go.
Far.
That's a fair comparison.
Not quite as far as Robin Williams and
as much as this movie is determined to tell you exactly what the text is, I feel like I could benefit from some, you know, like some things being left unsaid. And like, I go back and forth. Like, as I was watching it, I was like, don't put the text of what he's reading on the screen.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Mm-hmm. Let me listen to him and kind of get into his head. Right. Cause if you put the text on the screen, then I'm going to read the text and I'm thinking book. I'm feeling like I'm looking at a book.
But this movie is so pro book, Randy.
Yes.
It's so pro book.
It's the most pro book movie I've seen in a very long time.
Yes.
I can't remember the last time a movie was about people who read books.
Yeah.
like this one.
The mafia watches cartoons, even when they have a book in their hand.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the people we're actually following are all.
Yeah. And like I said, heavily themed movie. It's about books. It's about animals. Like I said, it's really about animals, and I can't figure out what the
bear
line is here.
Yeah, barefoot dog.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's a bunch of that. Maybe, there's just this idea. But my overall theme, my takeaway was, well, it's just about finding meaning to an otherwise kind of crappy job, life and job. Like he's on the street. He doesn't have much. He's almost killed at one point. He's saved by this dude, and that dude's now his. What do you call him over and over?
His retainer.
Yeah.
And I think that was what got him. Yeah.
Yeah. And so all that stuff, it just said to me, oh, well, this is someone who's had to build a mental cage. And that mental cage involves a bunch of shit about ancient samurai ways. And that's allowing him to live the way he is and deal with it. And that's interesting on its own. Like people who can build a persona for survival. And then everyone around him, I loved how everybody respected him. He walked around down the street and every street tough, every drug dealer, everybody on the street looking tougher than him or like Ghost Dog, you know, like.
Yeah, they got a song about him.
Yeah. Yeah, they had a rap about him.
And I think my favorite thing about that is the fact that that culture, the cross of the Japanese samurai culture and the urban culture, you could take this movie and shot for shot recreate it with samurai, you know, with actual sets and costumes and stuff with an old samurai movie, and it would work perfectly, having the friend who runs a fruit stand or something and the little girl who's learning the way of the sword.
Not an ancient samurai ice cream stand
but you could recreate it and it would work perfectly. Yakuza or whatever, and I guess you don't have yakuza and samurai at the same time, but still some sort of feudal gang kind of scenario,
right?
And that's what I think is beautiful about this is probably the part I liked the most about this, and stuff that I thought was kind of middling, the thing I liked the most about it was that this culture around this guy permeates everything around him to where you could drop this movie.
That's a really interesting take, because I hadn't thought of it at the time, but I think you're 100% right. It's very it's not quite a template, but it would work that way. You could flip it.
It would work that way. You could potentially see it through his eyes, Ghost Dog's eyes, and he would be in feudal Japan seeing all of these same events, kind of like they say in the movie, seeing the same events from two perspectives and getting a completely different story.
Yeah.
I like the idea of because they didn't hold our hands on how this character was created, but they did show that he has a life debt. And from there, we see that he reads books, and you know, books can change our lives in a minute. We can start reading a book and suddenly everything in our life can become about that. He had no direction after he finds that he's alive now and he has a life debt. And we're assuming that he didn't really have much going on before then. And now here he is and he's found direction because, you know, everything going forward is a gift.
Yep.
And
that, by the way, was his brother, by the way, who was, you know, had the younger version of Forrest.
Whitaker. Oh, really?
His name is Damon Little Forrest. No, his name is Damon.
Oh, I couldn't find it. Thank you.
Damon Whitaker. And he looks just like his brother. He's just a younger version of him. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
That guy's been in a lot of movies.
Who, Damon?
Damon Whitaker.
Oh, really? He's got a huge long list.
More than we thought.
Right? Is it always a double for his brother or other stuff?
No, I mean, a lot of it just looks like small roles. He's just
movies that are rating below fives, looks like.
Oh, yeah. IMDb. Really low ratings on those movies.
Yeah. He looks just like his brother, though. Man.
Yeah.
I mean, he just looked like a younger version of him. And when I first, when I was first watching it, I was like, oh, wow, they really younged up Forrest Whitaker. And then I saw the credits. I went, wait a minute, that's not him. It's another guy. And I thought it was his son. And then I was like, no, wait, it's too close to be his son. Okay, brother, that makes sense. But yeah, there's you know, that whole origin story is very loosely told. You don't really even know what that was all about or why.
But we all know. We don't know, but we know.
Yeah, we kind of know, but we don't know.
We know that story. Mm-hmm. We've seen that story. Henry Silver, all these great mafia guys too. I was just blown away by. It's just so comical seeing the three sitting there. Oh, the guy with the bad hearing.
He's amazing. The old guy? Yeah.
Yeah, the really old guy. Who's that guy? Yeah. I'm sure there's older generations that are going, Brian, he's a classic. And I'm like, okay, I don't know him still.
Passenger pigeon. That guy?
Yeah, that guy. God. They're extinct.
That guy rocked.
That was the second highest billed guy, right?
I think so. Yeah, he had a bit. He's somebody from some old stuff. And the guy that the main leader, the father of the girl is famous face from like old westerns and
yeah.
So many great older actors.
This is his final movie, by the way. He died not terribly. Well, no, he did die a ways later. Henry Silva, that's who it is.
Henry Silva is who we're talking about.
He's great. You know him from a million old things.
That face, man. It's just such a box.
At the same time, there's something about this that's like, oh, wow, this is a, you know, all of the cast of Goodfellas, if you order them off Temu, you know, like,
right.
Mm-hmm. Like they went to great lengths to make these guys unremarkable. This group of mafiosos, you know?
Sure. Right. Yeah, sure. Sure. He played, by the way, that guy, the Henry Silva guy, he played a year before this, did the voice of Bane in the Superman animated series. I think that's amazing. That guy is Bane.
That is great. Wow.
Yeah. And he's the guy at the top of the show that sounded like, where is it? That did this. That guy. That's amazing. You take this venerable old character actor and say, hey, you need to make a sound of an elk. Get going. He's like, really, all right.
I kind of wanted him to be the big boss, like the top, but he's kind of like mini boss. But he, you know, he felt like just with his icy stare that he should have been the head of the whole thing.
Well, I mean, he was technically the head. They just the structure of the movie was you were going to have a new big boss, like he would end up being a mini boss, but he truly was the guy in charge.
Pipe guy was the big boss.
Oh, I don't think so.
Bathroom pipe guy.
Yeah, who got shot in the bathroom is where you got to go to. By the way, the creativity with that, I loved it. I don't know if it's been done somewhere else, but you know, slowly pulling this, you know, locating the guy. I really like that.
I like that.
I know, I did too, but man, that's not how bathroom pipes work. You've got a pee trap.
It isn't. What, how big? I mean, you don't have like a 4-inch pipe coming out of your sink because that's basically
right. And it doesn't go straight to the basement either. Like, you know, there's.
Yeah.
I do like the creativity. Agreed. I like the creativity. Yeah. And I like how the cartoon kind of set up what you were about to see. So you're watching like to say, oh, how is this weird pipe thing going to work with the attack on the next guy?
So just to be really, really clear, that guy who gets shot in the face through the pipe was Sonny. Played by Cliff Gorman.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he really likes Flavor Flav, and I like him as a result.
Yeah, I loved him, dude. Yeah. I loved it. I
watched him dance around the bathroom.
Singing the whole time. I didn't even think they'd return to it, because when they did it earlier and he was talking about what he likes and talked about Flavor Flav and stuff, I thought, well, that'll be a one-off. We're never going to hear about that again. But nope, he's in his bathroom, like, rapping, walking around.
Because he's definitely my favorite of the Mafia again. Well, oh, God, I did like Heart Attack. Heart Attack Passenger Pigeons guy. Yeah.
Oh my God. He was riot.
Yeah. Yeah. All that stuff.
Uncle Junior.
All those guys made me laugh.
Yeah. Uncle, I kept thinking maybe he's not dead too. He could have just faked a heart attack. I was like, he didn't shoot him. He might be out of this.
I know. Yeah. He could be a chicken in the bucket. He could be faking it. And then as Forrest Whitaker's like waving his little gun around and putting it back in his holster, he's like, gotcha.
Yeah. You're right though. You nailed the stereotype of Uncle Junior. Like that is that kind of thing. And Sopranos did it with Junior, but others have done it too. It's like the one who's not really in charge, but he's been around forever. Nobody really wants to give him anything important to do, but we have to respect it because he's part of the family and been there since forever. Like for whatever reason, Jarmusch, who wrote this and directed it, seemed to understand those tropes really well. And then he just blew them up and they made me laugh every time they tried to mess with one. It's like,
I have one exception.
Okay,
The movie really doesn't earn the attempted joke where Forrest Whitaker and his French friend say basically the same thing in different languages. At some point, I was like, stop it. Stop it.
Yeah, that did get annoying.
Where he knew what he was saying and he would repeat it in a different set of words, but he, even though he didn't understand what he was saying, is that what you mean? Like that?
Okay. Yeah, that running gag just wasn't funny for me after a certain point. And I was like, sorry. I realize I kind of want a Hollywood ending and I kind of want Hollywood tropes and Jim Jarmusch isn't here to give me that. But if these two guys had found a little bit of common language over the course of the movie, That would have been really cool.
At least one or two words, right? I mean, just catching some stuff. Yeah, nothing though. It was the same running joke.
And it's because the filmmaker doesn't care about what I care about, which is the development of relationships. I want to see relationships go places. And like it kind of, the relationship between Forrest Whitaker's character and the little girl kind of develops. And that's what I like. And I want that.
Yeah,
and I like the relationship between
Camille. I love her so much. Yes, by the way, she's you guys watched Bernie, right? Bernie Mac.
She was on there. Yeah, that's where I'd seen her before, but I couldn't think of anything else, and I went and looked her
she
up.
She was a little younger here in this, but I was like, oh crap.
Yeah,
I was like, hey.
Yeah, she's great. She's a good little actress. Her role felt good. I felt like the movie had heart when it needed to have some heart. That is unusual for Jim Jarmusch movies. Usually they're just weird for no reason and you don't like anyone.
Meandering, like super meandering movies. The Coffee and Cigarettes is what I think about because I was excited to see that with Bill Murray, and it's like, oh, all right, this is kind of a little shoegazy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and some people love that stuff.
Art for art's sake.
It never quite lands for me when he does that. But that's why I guess I was so surprised here. Dead Man is one he did. Is it Dead Man? Hold on. Crap, the Johnny Depp one. It was like a Western sort of.
Oh yeah,
that's called.
I know what he's talking about.
I'm gonna find it here. It is called. It was before this. Shit. Well, I can't find it very easily.
Well, shit.
Dead, what's his face?
Anyway.
It was like Dead Man or something. It was something weird like that. It was Dead Man.
Dead Man, there it is.
It was called Rango, and he was a Rango.
There it is, 1995 Dead Man. It is a very strange film. Some people really like it. To me, it is the most meandery nonsense I've seen in years. It's just not great.
I do, and don't get me wrong, I do see why I like to say this. I can see why other people like Jim Jarmusch.
I can see why you like it. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. If you're out there and you're a fan, I can see why you like it. It's just not for me.
I can definitely see why you like it.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think he is a talented director if you like that sort of thing. And it's probably if you like Slacker kind of thing, right? Like that same kind of slice of life. This is more than that. This obviously has a little bit more of a plot and a climax and that sort of thing than Slacker did, but
it's in that zone for sure.
It's in that zone. Yeah, there's a little bit of Slacker.
I like seeing things that I always get to see, like these long shots. Yeah. These not long shots, not like distance, but like watching Forrest Whitaker lay in pigeon poop on a roof somewhere.
What grossed Scott out the most, by the way, is that what I
think it was
down.
Probably all the pigeon poop. It really,
you can feel the heat, and you're like,
you could smell that rooftop.
You could smell it.
Oh God,
feel it. It was just so visceral. And then he reads the note, and then I'm like, oh, he's just gonna do it. He's gonna eat it. Okay.
Yeah. Also, I wrote down second place gross was eating the pigeon message because paper. You know, paper fine, whatever. It's just wood.
Right.
It's pulpy wood. But that's been around the leg of a bird that shit the whole way here.
That's been in a mafia guy's hand sweating on it.
Yeah. Well, okay. I had to let me throw one more out there because I wrote two things down for what gross got out the most. What about talking your booty hole? And then
I forgot about that shit.
Gross.
That's gross.
He was taking care of the tank better, wasn't he? Is that what he was?
Yes, he was, exactly.
did you guys all kind of like identify with that though? Like, cause that's you've got to ask, you've always got to ask why did the filmmaker add this? Why is this here? Like why was this not edited out?
Right.
And this is to really, really get you all the way to this guy is all alone.
He's
perfectly happy. Mm-hmm. It would have been the same message if he had been naked. It would have been the same message. Like he's singing along to, a song and he's making a fool of himself. And that's because he is perfectly happy and alone.
Yeah.
And the talcum powder was supposed to be just a part of that.
Just showing you how comfortable
he was.
Walking around with a gun, you know, like setting it on the countertop and stuff. Like he's not completely feeling safe because he's walking around with that.
Yeah. Well, he's still a gangster. I mean, he still has a guy out front.
Confident enough to dance around and talk his booty hole without.
And the only other guy there is apparently his bodyguard, I suppose. And you know, he's in the next room watching cartoons.
Dude. Yeah.
Everyone's always watching cartoons in the other room.
Yeah. It's like a universe where it's That's all that's on Xfinity, apparently.
Yeah,
is whole reruns of Looney Tunes.
Like in the car, in the place, in the stuff. Yeah. And there's even like little hints of, they don't really get into it, but the daughter of the mob boss is not an unusual trope. We see that all the time. But what we don't usually see is they have this weird, awkward moment in the back of the car where they turn off cartoons. And he's just kind of darting his eyes left and right, realizing he has nothing to say to his own kid.
Yeah.
They've got nothing to talk about. Stuck with me for some reason. Just
less is more.
That was because she lied and she went and, you know, was having an affair with a guy.
Handsome Frank.
Yeah, but that's my point. Like, it doesn't matter. He still just doesn't know how to communicate with her. Like, there's a big old freaking chasm between a guy whose entire life is all about killing people and running drugs and running prostitution rings and doing mob things, and then the girl who didn't ask for this, you know, and she's in it deep in other ways. But it, I don't know. I found that to be poignant. It was like a moment of
She's the next generation. I kind of wanted to see what was going to happen there. I was like,
she's going to have to develop those cat-like reflexes or something. Well, see, she's so dopey and drug-addled, it seems like.
Yeah.
She's
straddling two worlds, right? Because she's interested in kind of the same topics of all of our smarter characters, as well as being kind of trapped in this world of violence that's wrapped around her. So yes, it's an interesting character.
I thought it was really interesting that he made Ghost Dog makes her into what she becomes, which is the person who has him killed, and he makes her that by being by allowing her to live. Like if his rules weren't so, you know, impossible for even him to understand, and he had just offed her along the way, like everybody else, then he could have gone on living and so on. And like, that was it was almost a twist. Like we still need a word for when something is like a twist, but it's not really like a big revelation.
Yeah.
Right.
It's hard to call. I don't know what to call that the way it was presented, but yeah, you're right. It's kind of a twist. I mean, they were kind of setting it up. If this wasn't Jarmusch, I'd say this is a normal Hollywood thing to say, this might get a sequel. So let's have a thing at the end that implies she'll be the new leader. Let's have a thing that implies the girl's going to grow up to be the next samurai because she's got the book now, and she also picks up the gun and aims it at what's his name. Like, there's all these like hints of what could go on, but you're never going to get that with a Jarmusch movie.
I didn't want a sequel, but I did like that it was going to repeat, but with some variations. So I dug the idea of getting to think after the movie.
No, I liked it. Yeah. So, I thought it was cool. I didn't understand what would you think he was trying to say when the girl picks up the gun, the camera's looking down the gun, mob dude's running away. She clicks it. Nothing fires. There's no bullet left or whatever, but the click makes him go, he kind of like veers like he's been hit. He's not, obviously, but it's like this moment of like dizziness or whatever.
He absolutely was hit.
Well, she didn't.
That's why he made that move.
But there's no bullets in the gun.
It was hurting so bad.
But the gun's got no bullets when she fires it.
She didn't shoot him. It was foreshadowing.
That's what I'm saying.
Understood. Yeah. Foreshadowing that she would eventually, this is her role.
She'd eventually go after him.
Even though she's playing the role right now or pretending the role, she will eventually step into that, right? She'll have to avenge Ghost Dog's death.
Yeah.
But not yet.
Not yet. Now is not the time, right? This is not the place because she's too young. Also, that gun clicked and did nothing.
Perlane.
I like that the mom was never anything but like a Charlie Brown teacher. Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Something about that actually worked because it was like, well, yeah, she's oblivious to this. She doesn't know what's going on with her daughter out there. And she shouldn't be out walking around getting ice cream in that part of the town. I mean, come on.
You think that ice cream truck would fire up, or you think it was just permanently at that location?
I think he probably moved around, but if I had to guess, the concept is he parks there, and that's just kind of
I think
he spent more money on the engine than on the music that plays.
Yes. I thought a lot about why is that music offensive? You got to take a movie like this as it's presented to you, right? And someone stopped and was like, we're going to make this music just terrible.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Discordant. Like, why?
It's like a haunted, that's the idea, right? He wants you to feel weird, and it did. Yeah. It was weird. his whole vow thing. It's just an odd thing. I understand the idea of you got this reclusive hitman who lives by the way of the samurai, doesn't need anyone's help or anything, and his best friend is a guy he's never understood. Something I like about that.
I love the fact that they repeat each other too. Like, you know, I'm going to say exactly what you just said.
Yeah.
Right.
To Randy's point, they maybe overdid it after a while, but it was still a fun way to explain that relationship. Yeah.
Yeah. I like it because it's, you know, they're friends because of locality, and Forest Whitaker's character, Ghost Dog, needs no input, or because he's already on a path, he is on the way of the samurai, and he's already getting everything. It's nothing's going to change him. He's headed on a path. Yeah. He's destined, and it wouldn't matter if he had a friend who was, you're like, no, don't do it. Oh no. So
it's even better because he doesn't have to have any of that. He just has this sort of, I get ice cream. It's usually free.
Yeah. We have a thing in common.
We love ice cream. Right.
Right.
And it's also somebody he can implicitly always trust. The only time he seemed weird about is when he saw that he had a gun in his pants, and that
don't follow my path.
Right? Yeah. Don't do what I'm doing. Your job is to be this like noodle folk guy who just has a cart.
Hey, I didn't think about being a noodle folk. I didn't think about that. That's an even better angle.
That's the stereotype, right? Like your job is to be not a jester. What am I trying to say? Just like you're out there selling ice cream. That's what you do.
Yeah. Just a point, a place to return.
Like a little bit of philosophy in there about roles or something. Yeah. But
eat your ice cream quickly before it melts.
I don't know why, but I mean, it's all the Jarmusch movies I've seen. This is easily my favorite. And I've only seen.
It might be mine too.
Yeah. Even though you're not like 100% on it, it's hard not to make this top of the thing.
It's kind of fun.
And it's got elements that it's hard not to like. It's hard not to like the tropey mafia guys. It's hard not to like. I can never not like Forrest Whitaker all the way from.
Yeah.
Freaking Fast Times at Ridgemont High, King of England, or Last King of Scotland, which I didn't realize he'd won two. He'd won two Oscars, one for this and one for. I knew he won.
No, he didn't win an Oscar for this.
I thought it was this one that he won
for this movie.
I thought there were. No, I've got that all wrong in my head. Then my history is wrong. I thought it was
the best portrayal of a Frenchman selling ice cream.
It was. it got nominated for a Palme at Cannes, and like that's something. I mean,
I thought he was nominated and won. I've been saying that all week. I guess Last King of Scotland. You're totally right. Damn it.
Which I loved. I thought that was great, but that's for another time.
Yeah.
But like I said, there's so many things in this movie that I can get past the jarmushiness of it. And appreciate it for the individual pieces that I like.
Yeah. I keep hearing that he's mushy. Great. I hear he's great in The Butler and never saw it. I liked his role in Battlefield Earth, one of the worst films we've ever seen, but I liked his role in it.
Oh God. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. He was good.
I gotta watch that again. I think it's growing in my memory. It's growing better.
Really?
That movie.
It stayed at 2.5 on IMDb. So good luck. I don't know how that's going to go for you. I think that movie is probably as bad as we think it is, but there are things about it, right, that are probably underappreciated. But if your movie's so bad, then, you know, how can you pull stuff out like that?
No, I didn't recognize until I started hitting the IMDb was the blonde who had the Jaguar and went into the place.
Oh, yeah.
Left her car running. Yeah. Are you not from around here? That was Sharon Angela. She's been in, she played Rosalie in The Sopranos. She's been in tons of TV stuff. She's had voice work in Grand Theft Auto, stuff in Empire State.
Knowing their connection, I honestly for a second thought, oh my God, is that like Debbie Harry and just kind of like a really, you know,
usually she's
a Debbie Harry in kind of a skanky role, but no.
She's a brunette. Once I saw her as a brunette, I was like, but she was wearing that, you know, that blonde, didn't recognize her.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. I like her. She's good. I'm looking at her stuff here. She's been in all sorts of things I like.
Since it wasn't his first Grand Theft Auto, I was really entertained by it. Like if his first had been ripping off from that lady, I would have been like, man, why are you treating that lady so bad? But his
she
first
knew you.
Yeah, but we established that this is a guy who he gets around by stealing a car first. And so like when he did that, I was kind of laughing. I was like, shouldn't have left the keys in it, idiot.
Yeah. Those people at the park. Like, you should turn around. What are you guys doing?
Yeah. Yeah, there was no victim, right? We didn't know who the owner was. We didn't see who dropped the car off. We just know it's a kind of a nicer car and someone stole it. But then I was like, man, after that, every time he got in one of those cars, and every one of them had like Kenwoods and aftermarket head units, double dens. And I was like, oh my God, I want to be in the 90s again.
Yeah,
putting
dude.
Stereo in my car.
Hell yeah.
Gosh, that was such a big deal to me. When I was 16 and I got my first car, I spent every day a little bit at the car audio store because I so wanted one of those.
The old God, I'd forgotten like all the goofy animation of like the you pop the CD in, Woo. And then there's like all this little LED animation of it, of it going along the sides.
You're in the future, baby.
I do miss that kind of thing. Yeah,
those were the days. He always, by the way, there's a piece of trivia that says he always turned his volume up to 21 in the car.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know why.
I enjoyed that. It kind of reminded me of what I love about Miami Vice. I love just watching scenes of people driving around the city, listening to whatever music and just driving around, seeing the reflections of the city and the glass and everything and just watching somebody. It's just such an, I love it. I don't know why.
I do. I like those when they do that in movies. I do like that kind of like they always seem to do it with Vegas too. Like somebody's driving down the strip and you see the reflections of all the hotel casinos in the window.
Yeah.
Sometimes in the wrong order, but whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Which is
you've heard me complain about that.
You see it. It's impossible not to notice it. It's like, flamingo somehow is right next door to the pyramid. Yeah. How does that work?
I've never been, so Ovid looks right to me. I'm like, it looks exactly how it's supposed to look.
You're describing a quality of a movie, right? And I think the quality is rewatchability. And that is very fascinating to me because I always want to like cut that down a little bit. Like, I don't want you to ever take rewatchability when I bring it up to mean that the movie is better or, you know, like somehow like a great or important thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I can put on Michael Mann's Miami Vice anytime. I'm not saying that makes it a great movie, and I'm really not saying you should put it on anytime, but there's just something about it so rewatchable for me.
Yes.
And I'm kind of starting to think maybe I'll watch Ghost Dog every now and then.
Yeah, I think I could too. We have a lot of fans who are like just like this. They're like, dude, Ghost Dog, my favorite movie, or it's one of my favorites, or I love it so much. Like, there are people who are very fond of this thing, and I think it is. I would watch this again. I kind of want to sit down with Kim and watch it, to be honest. Yeah. She didn't watch it with me. Yeah. For this viewing, obviously, but I think she
ghosted
get a kick
your
out
dog.
Of it. She kind of did.
Wow.
But I would love to. wow. I would love to watch it with certain people because I just think some people in my life would be like, oh, yeah, I could see why this was kind of a big whoop. And I don't know if you've seen his IMDb lately, but Jarmusch is on a run of like terrible films. Like,
what?
Was he really?
All fours out of tens and, you know, just badly.
Oh, no.
Received reviewed stuff, and he probably doesn't give a shit because that's that kind of guy. He's just like, whatever, I'm making what I want to make. Hey, I'm weird. Like, that's just his thing.
the thing is he's weird, but he's so competent.
Yeah, it's competently like, weird. Like, yeah,
like when you look at him, you're like, oh, this is the kind of guy that if he was a musician, he'd be making music that I couldn't really understand.
Yeah,
like that wouldn't really entertain me.
Yeah,
but he's making movies that are just, it's just movies. These are movies, you know, they're not movies.
They're definitely movies. You could define them as that, but sometimes they're just boring.
Okay. Yes. I'll give you that.
but they're movies and they're, I don't know. Like, he's one of those guys to me. He's like Lynch. Lynch has a spotted past as well. Some of his movies are brilliant. You see his movies and go, wow, that's good. And then you'll see a couple of them and go, oh, you've
did
lost
you
your way.
And you kind of know,
we talk about that.
About what?
The Dead Don't Die. Did you watch that from 2019?
I don't know what
kind
that is.
Kind of a zombie kind of thing.
Don't know what that is.
Yeah. The Dead Don't Die. It's got some people in it. You might Bill Murray, Adam Driver, Tilda Swinton, you know.
Oh.
I have no idea.
I would call it his most, like his biggest movie.
Competent. Yeah.
That's like Jarmusch's
biggest movie. That's what I've been wanting to watch. I've seen the trailers a couple of times.
What's
her face from Big Love or whatever it is.
I remember the trailers. How did this do?
Savini. Yeah.
Was this well received?
It looks like IMDb is a 5.5 out of 10. So, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
I remember being excited and then hearing nothing. And so I think I just kind of fell off that track. But Jarmusch, and I guess that's not the only time. Broken Flowers, he worked with Bill Murray. He worked with him on that cigarettes one you were talking about, Brian, I think. That called Coffee and Cigarettes? Yeah.
Cigarettes and Coffee. Yeah.
Well, which is it?
I mean, look
at
that.
You don't want to do that wrong.
Look at that cast.
Well, you know what? Now that you say that, it's like both of them sound correct. Coffee and Cigarettes, Cigarettes and Coffee. I think it's Cigarettes and Coffee.
I mean, check a look. Oh, it's Coffee and Cigarettes. You were close.
Yeah, because you got to have coffee then cigarettes. You don't want to do a cigarette and then drink coffee. Yeah. That sounds wrong.
You got like
I don't know. I don't do the performer, so I wouldn't know what order, what the best the order is.
But look at this. Look at this cast. Bill Murray, Tom Waits. Stephen Wright, Iggy Pop, Steve Buscemi. Steve Buscemi's in it. Like, this is a bit. That sounds amazing.
Yeah,
and he brought the French guy back because he works with him and everything. So,
and that movie, Broken Flowers, was the longest running at my local art theater.
Mm-hmm. Is it called Broken Flowers? We're talking about The Dead Don't Die, I believe.
No, we're still talking about. We moved on.
Coffee and cigarettes.
Right.
I thought we were Coffee and Cigarettes.
I thought me and Scott were talking about The Dead Don't Die. What are you talking about?
I think we started the and then same cast. We got moved around. Yeah, but he has his friends all the time. That's what he does, right? This is one of those directors where he's like, hey, Iggy Pop, what are you doing this weekend? I'm shirtless. I'm running around a
waiting
stage.
Waiting on you to call, baby.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Come on over here. Tom Waits, what are you doing? I'm just mumbling into a microphone. Well, then come on in here. Let's go. Let's make a movie together, sort of thing. But I don't know. The guy's probably got more in him. How old is he?
Born
53.
There's no doubt that for most of those people, when he contacted them, said, hey, I'm making a movie called Coffee and Cigarettes, they all said,
oh, those are my two favorite things. are we going to be doing that? Are you asking if I want coffee and cigarettes?
Yeah.
If that's what you're asking, I'm in.
I don't even know anyone to know anymore.
What if we have those guys all wrong? What if they're just like teetotaling, quiet?
I can tell by their voices. I think we have it right on the money.
Yeah, a couple of smokers. Yeah.
That's a good point. Anyway, what else we got here? Damon, or I already mentioned that. Let's see. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, the main character, Forrest Whitaker, does not have an on-screen non-voiceover line for any dialogue until 37 minutes into the damn thing. It takes a while. Yeah.
When he is actually speaking in real time, it's kind of underwhelming. Like you get set up to think, oh, he's just a narrator. And like when he starts talking, like, no, stick with the narration. The narration is real good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is. I actually really like that VO voiceover stuff. I thought that was great.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty good. It works here because it's the way of this movie. And I cared for it. What happened to the, and what, but occasionally they would take a sidetrack, like the martial artist who's baiting people into the alleys. What is this superhero guy carrying groceries, acting like an old man until somebody tries
to? Yeah, that was a weird scene. That was
then
weird.
He goes into martial arts.
That
town.
Was such an interesting, like almost a dude in a bucket, right? Like he walks by, sees this guy do something and then just kind of move.
And then Forrest Whitaker goes, game, respect game. And he kept on walking. I was like, all right.
Yeah. Well, and that was the whole point of that was not necessarily to make you laugh or make you interested in that other character, but to let you see that Ghost Dog was a man of the people and was going to intervene until he wasn't needed.
Yeah. And then that guy, I don't know. I just was so extreme. It was like, he was the perfect martial artist suddenly, and then they just let that go. He's kind of a chick in the bucket without actually being a chick in the bucket. He was just kind of like this, like, what the hell was that? Anyway, moving on, you know?
He's on totally, a parallel track. He's reading a book, you know, I don't know, how to perform kicks. And so he wants to put to use what he's been learning. And so he had to bake some money into it.
You think, part of me was like, well, this is someone who maybe admires Ghost Dog and has learned that he has to take control, you know, don't let the world affect him. Like, I thought they were trying to teach us a message there, but I'm really not sure. I don't think so. Yeah, I think it was just, that guy knew karate.
This movie taught you nothing.
It did teach me one thing that I found very interesting, and I almost started like looking into it and then realized, no, I'm not going to do that. And that was the daily meditation on your impending death. I felt like that was you know, there's a ridiculous list of ways that you might die today. And I laughed quite a bit at that. And I know the movie took it really seriously. And I think it was unintended comedy.
Yeah.
Right. But by the way, don't do that. Don't sit in a ponder your death every day.
Spend every day. Well, you basically, like the book says, Hagakure says, just spend every day like you're already dead. Pretty much meditate on your own death. And as a so-and-so, you are already dead.
Yeah, but maybe the profoundness of that is that it's an ancient text about a time where death is around every corner. Your average lifespan is nothing. Yeah,
it shouldn't be necessarily considered to be current.
Yeah, but it kind of works because he lives in a really dangerous time too, in a very dangerous place, and his time is limited. So I can see why it worked, but I don't know. I kind of wanted, if there's anything missing from the movie, it was more. Maybe it was just enough, but I liked that stuff. I liked the modern, rough city juxtaposed with feudalist concepts is a really interesting thing. And so to say there wasn't enough maybe isn't true because the whole movie is just soaked in it. So
It may not be visual, but it's absolutely conceptual.
Yeah.
And, I could even use the dog one more time.
One more
appearance of the dog.
and obviously kind of take it back to when we were talking about the Wu-Tang Clan, like that is the influence of Wu-Tang Clan being that mix of urban and Asian cultures.
Oh, that's true, right? Like that's their whole vibe. That's a good point.
I know the dog wasn't a Doberman Pinscher, but I was really hoping it would morph into Snoop Dogg. Didn't happen.
I'm walking yo, yeah.
Smoke weed every day. Yeah, that would have been fun. Right. Why not? There's also a piece of trivia here that says, I already gave you guys that one, the brother, right? I've already talked about the brother three times.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not bringing that up again.
I'll sit through it again if you want to, though. I mean,
there's something here I wrote, something about the old school mob stuff that worked for me in a weird and goofy and very uncomfortable way. Like when they were interviewing him about what had happened to Handsome Frank or whatever his name was.
Yeah. Handsome Jack. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Handsome Frank.
That really, I know there was something uncomfortable about it. And I don't just mean
he's
intense.
He's sitting there with that daughter, you know, who's kind of like curled up on the chair, and he's just sitting there watching. It's just a very uncomfortable scene, and I liked it.
I don't know how to explain it. And also, this movie really likes shooting people, but having the people who are shot not really react to the shot for a minute.
Sit there and then slowly collapse.
Yeah. And it would like
and most everybody had accepted their death a little like it's just like, what are you looking at? It's like you got a gun on me. It's perfectly normal for you could tell by the way they were acting that it was normal for them to be in a life or death situation every day. So no one seemed like they were running away screaming or anything. Right.
No.
At the same time.
Yes.
For a bunch of guys who they're at for all of their elderly years, they have been hiring hitmen. They've been hiring hitmen. When the time comes that they feel like they need to kill a hitman, they don't hire a hitman. They go try to kill all the bird keepers themselves.
Right. Yeah.
And I just thought that was so wacky and fun.
And they also sent the two fattest guys they got who are like just full of pasta.
Like, right. Oh my God. Carrying loaded guns up the stairs. Oh my God.
Hold on a second.
Yeah, I like that.
Hey, happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. Wow.
Anybody going to eat corned beef today?
Corned beef,
because I was told that that's not really an Irish thing. That's a thing that Irish people brought over here because cabbage was so cheap that it was easy and cheap to make. And
Really?
Yeah.
We're absolutely doing that today, and I'm going to tell everybody.
Welcome to the cheapest meal we could make.
Yeah. It's going to piss Kim off, but I'm going to wait till she's done because she really prides herself in this stuff. She's going to make all of that, and then all the kids are coming over, and I'm going to go, ding, 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 ding. Excuse me. I have something I'd like to announce. This is all bullshit. This was like crap food. I found out today this is garbage. Shit.
Goodbye.
at least that's what was told me by the very Irish person in our audience at TMS that corned beef is not something you do. But no, as I was saying, you hire the two guys who can barely get up a flight of stairs, several flights of stairs without having a heart attack, and then give them loaded guns to carry while they're like heavy breathing.
Yeah, that was great.
That one gun, that hand cannon that one guy had was amazing.
Oh God, that was amazing. Yeah. I loved all that shit. Just bring me more. I love mob shit. I like comedy mob shit. I like serious mob stuff. Like, just this movie could have been a whole other movie about that, about them. Yeah. Maybe that was my biggest surprise. I thought it was going to all be urban stuff and like, you know, everyone's poor. It's in the project. Like I had all these preconceived notions about this based purely on seeing Ghost Dog with his cornrows with a sword, and I just thought, well, all right, this is gonna be one of those movies. But it wasn't. It was like this weird clashing of cultures where he's from a very different place. The mob guys are all racist a-hole, you know.
Except for John Turmy, who's just like, oh, Jesus. I just don't want to be in this situation, but I gotta, you know, I gotta be honorable.
Which one was he?
He's the retainer. He's the person who saved Forrest Whitaker's character. And I think he does a pretty good job of feeling torn between everything. And he's just like, I don't understand the world anymore. And I don't even know what to do. I'm just trying to stick to what I'm supposed to do. And none of this makes sense.
I like Victor Argo. This is a dude they kept catch the pigeons all the time.
Yeah,
he's so fun catching pigeons.
That guy's great. The guy that played Handsome Frank, Richard Portnow,
a lot of stuff.
Yeah, Richard, you know him from tons of things. He's in all sorts of stuff, including The Sopranos. He was in there for a bunch.
Yeah, I imagine, you know, just because of the time frame that's coming out around the same time, that a lot of these people were like, oh, yeah, you know, I finished this movie. I got this new TV show on HBO that we're working on. Hopefully it's going to be really good.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. There's also this dude, Richard Portnow played a guy named Ray on Seinfeld, and I recognized him immediately. It's like, oh yeah, there's Ray. It was only one episode, but still. I like shit like that. Yeah, it's back when Frank Costanza was played by a different guy, so it was early on.
Oh, sure.
But he's still rolling.
Before, Stiller, yeah.
Yeah, still rolling, this guy, kicking butt. And he's kind of a handsome old fart.
He's handsome old part.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Did they change Costanza dads? I thought they only changed Seinfeld's dad.
No, it was both. They had two different dads. I didn't realize that. Yeah. They started their first couple episodes showing fathers. Yeah. Maybe only one for Jerry's, but I think a couple for George's. And then they swapped out.
Wow.
Which at the time, no one remembers because you're going week to week and no one remembers anything. It's kind of like, Colonel Potter was on here.
You see right away. Yeah.
I remember on MASH, it was like, Colonel Potter's here as this totally different character. And then two episodes later, he's like,
hogwash.
Yeah. He's like a whole different guy like 2 weeks later. It's so weird. Well, anyway, we have anything else we'd like to say that's important about this film before we do clips? What do you think?
I recognized in the moment that the movie was doing like references to other things, and I enjoyed not really needing to know what the things were, or like there's something about the movie, it's like it's got a level of maturity. And so, like, for instance, when Ghost Dog is going to be a sniper and a bird lands on the barrel of his gun, I'm sure that's a reference to something. I don't want to know. I don't need to know what that's a reference to.
We definitely know he has a thing for birds, right? So, I mean, that was enough for me. I was like, good enough.
The only time he was upset was when the birds died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he was so upset.
He was pissed. I don't blame him. I mean, those are his birds, man.
Spent a lot of time with those birds, training them and feeding
Sleeping on them. Making sleeping sweet on their bird love to them.
Yeah.
accidentally ingesting feces from a bird by eating their message.
Rubbing their poop into the back of his jacket.
Yeah. I mean,
don't sleep there. Don't do it.
You've had a
little shit on you.
You've had a real experience with these birds and now they're dead. Right. And boy, were they dead. Jeez Louise. Yeah, they went through there and just killed every bird.
I'm imagining the prop guys like taking washcloths and soaking them in blood and then sticking a bunch of feathers to them.
I actually had a problem with that scene because I'm like, okay, that's a lot of birds. That's a lot of shooting. Even in this city that's full of crime, if you're shooting 50, 60 times, because you're not going to hit every one of them all the time. The birds be flipping around and stuff. I'm like, that'd at least be like 30 minutes worth of
The movie has this conceit that you can do gangster stuff in the city and you're never going to even be observed, much less will someone come attend to what's going on. And it's like, after you've seen that for an hour and a half, someone says, oh man, you only ever get cops out in the country. I'm like, that's true. Yeah, that's like, what a strange little reference to the thing I've been feeling.
Joke in your town. Randy.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
Says so. Yeah,
that's good. Very good point. Well, anyway, let's do some clips. It's time, and we're here for it. So let's do it. Here are some random clips about things. Let's start with easy there, Mr. Chicken.
Easy now, Mr. Chicken. Easy.
Yeah.
It's funny because he's a pigeon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a pigeon. And they sounded weird. Here's an example. I think those are dudes.
That's definitely a dude making a noise.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
I don't know. I feel like if you're a dude doing a chicken sound, it's always going to sound like
chicken or pigeon. What are you?
Oh, yes, that's more dove, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, it's more.
But aren't doves are pigeons?
They're kind of they're pigeon adjacent.
Aren't they actually doves, though? I thought they were.
I think we did talk about this on TMS, and I think I was surprised to find that they were pigeons, just white.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure someone's going to let us know they were all wrong. But I did find it interesting that the last bird he looks at this dead is the white dove at his feet to indicate that, okay, that's it. Shit just got real. Pieces over.
Okay, I just found it. There is a website called Pigeonpedia, and I'm not kidding. It's a whole whole website dedicated to pigeons. And it says here, difference between dove versus pigeon. One of the most common questions in the avian world is, are doves and pigeons the same thing? Scientifically, there is no confusion, as doves and pigeons are technically the exact same bird, but language caused a distinction, creating two definitions. So pigeons, when you hear pigeons, that you think urban bird in the city kind of thing.
Right.
When you hear doves, you think, oh, I let them out on our wedding and they're beautiful.
It's hilarious.
The same
one
birds.
Is like a flying rat, and one of them is like an emblem of peace and beauty. And that's funny.
Yeah.
Now, according to nationalparks.gov.
Oh, whatever. We've already been to Pigeonpedia. We don't want to hear none of your state sponsored whatever bullshit you're about to say.
Pigeonpedia might be a little bit biased and want people to think that doves.
What do they say?
They say pigeons and doves belong to the same family of birds, Columbidae, which consists of more than 300 species of birds. They share similar features like thick and round bodies, short necks, and thin beaks.
Rude.
But doves are generally of a smaller stature, while pigeons are often larger and stubbier.
So they are
it's
distinct.
Like mice versus rat. Is that kind of what you're saying to me right now? It's like, what a nice, cute little mouse versus a rat.
Yeah, that's pretty close. That's a real weird thing, though, that Pigeonpedia has it wrong or right. I don't know. I don't know who to believe. It's the internet.
I mean, doesn't Pigeonpedia?
I don't know who to believe.
Somebody who's
I don't know who to believe, the official science page or the Pigeonpedia.
Well, let me tell you what.
Well, I think that both can be right, right? Like,
yes,
they're both members of the Columbidae family.
Right. Yeah. But they're different genus and species.
Right. Yeah, and then, so in Pigeonpedia, I go to the main page and it's pigeon accessories, pigeon food, pigeon healthcare. Like, it's pretty pigeon focused.
Pigeon healthcare. Wait.
And if people think pigeons are street rats, they would want to push the agenda that they are more like doves. So you're right.
Yeah.
I agree.
Who knows? Yeah. I mean, it's probably we're probably both right, Scott.
We're probably both correct. Will pigeon experts please pipe up in our emails and let us know what the hell's going on? Because we're confused.
Tina's brother used to have pigeon, like actually train pigeons, homing pigeons, and he had a thing in their backyard while Tina was growing up. And when I started dating Tina, she took me out there to show me. I was like, yeah, this is the most disgusting little outhouse with windows I've ever seen. Get me away from it.
Wow. Was that bad? Okay.
It was bad. It was gross.
This kid who's throwing toys out the window. We didn't really talk about this kid.
Oh, yeah. I forget about that kid.
Yeah. There's a part that made me laugh, and it's this.
You little prick. Eat me.
Eat me.
Eat me.
Oh, we were still in that era, right?
Yeah.
People still say eat me.
Yeah, sure they do.
Love it.
I mean, 99 and now, I don't think it's that different.
Eat my shorts, dude.
Yeah, why not? Say the name of the movie.
Ghost Dog.
All right. Thank you.
Oh, he said Ghost Dog. I've been saying it wrong. I've been just saying Ghost Dog. Yeah. Ghost Dog.
Fastest on the wrong word.
That's right.
So that's why I said marching gloves. Wrong.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That explains the whole
marching
thing.
Band gloves.
Yeah. Those, and that poor family on the side road who just stopped for a little treat at the stop place, and now they got a stolen car license plate. They're definitely getting stopped.
Oh yeah. Yeah, which I could those kids were totally facing what Ghost Dog was doing with the changing license plate. You think they would have seen what was going on.
He's a ghost dog. Can't
he's
see
a ghost
him.
Dog.
Can't see a ghost. Okay. Yeah.
They'd hear that weird little push button screwdriver thing he was using.
I couldn't understand what he was using.
Yeah,
I respected his soldering skills in the bird poop lean to, but
I think they make screwdrivers that you basically operate like a kind of like a jackhammer where you push it back and forth, and it by doing that it rotates almost like a ratchet, but it rotates the screwdriver.
I've never seen one
exist.
Faster. I've never seen one like that. That's cool.
Yeah,
I would use that because I don't like.
There's only two.
Yeah.
There's only two stores in that town too, by the way, besides Ice Cream Truck. It's like, what is there, like that electronic Radio Shack, city, inner city Radio Shack they had, and mm-hmm. what was that right next to it? It was
I can't remember. There, yeah, but you're right. It's like a three store town. No question.
Yeah, all I know is that I loved that he made his own jam box. I loved that scene. Did you ever do that? Take a car radio and make your own wooden jam box?
No, I never did that. Jeez, yeah, look at that? You. No, what's? I saw it, but I didn't know what the hell he was doing. You tell me more. What happened? What? How is that a thing?
When you can't afford a jam box, but you got some shit laying around, you know, it's like, oh, I got a car stereo that I have, and I got some speakers. I have another car. Let's make a little jam box.
I've never heard of that. Never heard of that.
Yeah.
That is news to me. I feel like I missed out somehow on my childhood. Here's some mob talk that I enjoyed.
What we need to do is eliminate the scumbag who whacked Frank. Frank was one of us. His killer needs to be neutralized. Erased from the face of the planet.
Yeah, it's just so like...
Scumbag.
I'm looking for the word.
Yeah.
Neutralized.
I love that crap. Say the name again.
Like a ghost.
Yeah, a ghost, like a dog, a ghost. Something with a bird.
Did you say he contacts you through a fucking bird?
Are you telling me? Like, just that guy's whole vibe was so cartoon. I loved him. What species of bird, says old fart in charge guy?
What particular species of bird?
A bird.
You know he's in Dick Tracy, right? He's definitely got to be in that Dick Tracy.
He is. Yeah. They almost had to put no makeup on him. Yeah. you had to barely put makeup on him. That guy has a face for that.
Yeah.
Erase this weirdo.
Erase this weirdo.
All right. Do it. All right. Here's all the ghost dog names you can handle.
Ghost dog.
What?
Ghost dog.
Ghost dog? He said ghost dog.
Yeah, he calls himself Ghost Dog.
So many ghost dogs.
thank you for stopping before we go off on a tangent about how Indians name themselves after animals.
Oh yeah, that was all a little rough.
I loved it. I loved that scene because first they were like, "I can't believe these rappers with their names," and then the Indians, and then immediately followed up with, "Hey, Big Angie." You know, it was like,
No. He yells for Sammy the Snake.
Like, Sammy the Snake.
They literally have a guy in the next room named Sammy the Snake, and he calls for him.
I love
that.
It's
ridiculous. Hey, Sammy the Snake.
I love that shit. Here he is talking about rappers.
He means like the rappers. You know, the rappers. They all got names like that. Snoop Doggy Dogg, Ice Cube, Q-Tip, Method Man. My favorite was always Flavor Flav from Public Enemy. He got the funky fresh fly flavor. Live lyrics from the bank of reality. I kick the flies through maneuver technicality. Do a dope track. I love that guy.
I don't know anything about that.
I love it.
Man, they leaned all into the way back to the beginning of Public Enemy. Yeah, like this guy was in the first album, you know?
Yeah. Confirmed East Coast fan. That guy. Here's that we played it earlier for the show intro, but I'll do it again. Yeah, that's great. I found some audio. This is weird. This is very old. It was tape, so I had to convert it before the tape went bad. But this is from Ibbitt's mom sent it. It's about, I guess this is right after you asked your date to prom and her reaction to you.
Okay, sure.
This is it.
My mom says you never talk to nobody and you got no friends.
Jeez. Harsh.
But we actually have the whole limo to ourselves, and we wouldn't have to share it with any other couples, which was nice.
Yeah.
It worked out well.
She sounds a little young for you, though, I think, maybe.
She was.
I didn't see that going that way. All right.
You're right. It landed different.
It did. Here's some of the stuff Brian hated about the music. I isolated this one little weird blip sound they kept making during one song, and it was this. I kept playing that over and over.
Oh.
I liked it.
Yeah, if you keep playing it over and over, it'll actually be the song.
Yeah. It'll eventually become sentient and be the song it was meant to be. Here's some poetry of war.
It's poetry. The poetry of war.
Yeah, these guys.
Sure.
The whoosh sounds he made with his guns all the time.
Oh my god.
I love that shit so much.
Okay, so we have to see him practicing with the blades in order to understand why he whips around the gun all the time. But did we have to just abandon the blades? Like the blades never come back ever.
No.
Like
we're just, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, he's a gunman.
Right. You're right. I could have used some swordplay. I don't disagree. Here's what's this? Oh, he shot me in the same place.
Shot me in the same exact place as last time.
Yeah. That would hurt.
Love that. Yeah. Oh my god. Frickin' same spot. Oh.
Then some really good bullet sound. Ooh.
Ooh, that's good.
That went right through your pillow. Silencer. Oh man. Mm-hmm. That's the one where he was aiming it at it was a poignant moment. He had those rednecks on the ground that killed the bear.
Yeah.
Man, this movie went to a bunch of places we didn't talk about.
It really did, yeah.
Yeah.
But when he shot him, it was and then cut to black. It's a very cool little scene.
Yeah. I do like that we get to see you make your own or assemble your own silencer.
Yeah, like that.
Washers and foam or washers and Brillo pads or whatever.
Yeah, that was cool. All right. Well, that's that. Now it's this. It's the Film Sack checklist, and it goes like this. Cool as hell narration? Check. I liked it. Flipping guns around like samurai swords? Check. And finally, no one ate anything but ice cream in this movie? Check.
Right.
Didn't seem healthy. Whatever. Let's get to the Star Trek connections. There's got to be somebody here.
Nothing. Not even a little bit. Like, not even like a stunt person or something. I think this is a really good example of the East Coast, West Coast nature of a lot of our movies.
Yeah.
Like you make a movie in New York and you only hire local guys. And Star Trek is made in Los Angeles. I think that's the answer there.
I was really hoping for like one of those mob guys or something being in Star Trek. I looked
all up and down, man. Like I say, not even the stunt people. Like usually you could find somebody, but
yeah, nope. That's surprising.
There were no stunt people in this movie.
Yeah, no stunts.
Their own stunts.
Zero stunts. I know the old guys getting shot were definitely doing their own stunts because they were just like, and then just kind of roll over like a freaking weeble that wobbles but won't fall down kind of moves.
Yeah. Right, right.
While I was going, I found lots of film sack connections, like the main mobster, Henry Silva.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We saw him in Above the Law. He was a guy.
Was he above the law?
No. That was Steven Seagal as above the law.
He was the only one above, and everybody else is below the law.
Below the law. Duh. Keep your law position straight there, Dunaway.
This is our sixth Forrest Whitaker film on Film Sack.
Wow.
Okay, hold on. Can I guess? Let's do, The Earth, I just talked about. The
Battlefield Earth.
Battlefield Earth. Did we do... the one where John Travolta can predict the future because the comet hit him in the eye.
Phenomenon.
Yes, phenomenon.
Okay, so that's another phenomenon. One because he was his friend in that. And that's all I got. Anyone else? Any other?
No.
I didn't watch
Fast Times on here, so no.
No. We might want to do that one.
What was that second one you said? You said Phenomenon and you said Battlefield Earth. What was the other one you said?
Ghost Dog.
Go well, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. So that's all we said so far.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything else.
Yeah. What are the other ones?
So he was in Bloodsport and
What was he in Bloodsport?
I don't remember that at all. Oh wow.
Nothing.
He was in Panic Room. And
I do
he was one of the bad
room.
Guys, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And then the movie that we sacked here that I completely forgot Forrest Whitaker was in, and I want to go watch it again for fun, was Arnold Schwarzenegger's The Last Stand and I thought it's got Johnny Knoxville. I forgot it has Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah, I forgot about that too.
Either. What did he do?
I like that Last Stand movie.
Because it's just like simple, good fun.
Yeah. Action. Yeah. That one's a good, I don't know. Good old Arnold phase too. I like old Arnold.
Yeah.
All right. Nicely done. Let's move on to the soundtrack grade. I'd give it a W for weird. I think it is mixed bag, but there's something I like about it. I can't really put my finger on it, but I also think Ibbett's, your criticisms are warranted. It's a weird decision to go so repetitive, like, I don't know how to explain it. Like the songs were fine, but they all felt like sample loops.
They did. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just like,
but obviously it was an intentional choice. And while I might not like it, there are people out there who do, and good for you. And
good for them.
Enjoy it.
Yeah. Good for them.
I looked through Riz's list, and where he's credited as composer on movies, I don't remember any of them. I'm sorry. I don't remember any of them like for the music, like Kill Bill Volume 1. He was the person responsible for the music that you heard. I don't remember it, that, you know?
Yeah. Wow. That may be a good thing.
Blade Trinity. He was the composer for Blade Trinity.
Oh, wow. I barely remember it.
I can't remember this stuff.
I barely remember Trinity though. I know that Ryan Reynolds is in it.
I don't remember the music either, though.
It's not my favorite Blade. It's okay.
He composed the music for all of the Afro Samurai things.
Oh, those are good. I like those.
Like the movie, the miniseries, the video game. That's all RZA music. And I think this movie was pretty good. I think I liked the music in this movie more than you did.
Yeah.
Oh, more than
certainly more than me.
More than Ibbot.
Oh, that was fine.
Yeah, I thought it was all right. It's experimental and weird, and that's, you know, you're hanging out with Jim Jarmusch. What do you expect?
I liked the final song that was, you know, it's very experimental. That last song he's doing as he's going on his way to his death ride, the last car ride. I guess must have after he stole it from the lady.
Oh yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. That was experimental. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. But I think that had that weird sound in it, and that drove me crazy.
Yeah, that was the one with the weird sound.
Yeah. No, that's not it. That's the
no, one. Not that. That'd be great.
This
though.
One, I kept doing that, and that drove me a little crazy. But whatever.
Yeah. And at first, I was like, "What is it going on?"
Nicely done. Let's now move on to the social media post where you guys.
Oh, it got Jewish. Okay.
Oh well, send your emails to Brian on that one. Sum up this thing.
Is that not?
I don't know. Is it?
I can't do that. I also can't roll my arms.
Challah bread. It's very Jewish. Yeah.
I'm not. All right. That's not offensive. That's. Yeah. I can't roll my R's either. I can't do either one of those things.
Well, don't ask me. I'm not Jewish.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. Happy Patty's Day. Let's get to this social post. It's 280 characters from each of you, and you sum it up in the way you know best. Let's start with Randy.
Ghost Dog Way the Samurai. Under your feet is a secret key, the secret key to a secret door that opens up a big space in the floor. And in that is a case and more. The gun inside ends dialogue. You shouldn't have killed John Wick's dog.
Oh, man.
Now he is a ghost dog.
That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. That's solid. I like that one. Let's take it over to Brian Dunaway there.
Ghost dog, the way of the samurai. I'm trying to do like I did in the movie. Ghost dog, the way of the samurai. I don't mean you any disrespect, but your movie is covered in bird shit. Also, fancy samurai gun flip and shooting people with my good eye. Oh, I almost made it without mentioning it.
Oh, you brought up the eye, dude. He's got a sleepy eye. It's fine.
Yeah, it's there's a this disorder, and he has makes him, you know, this you can't help not you can't no, not notice it.
Oh, it's yeah, his, it makes him unique looking.
Is,
yeah, it's yeah, unique.
His eyelid is yeah. is muscle or something in that eyelid. It's a condition. People have it. It's
my
fine.
My nephew has that. There's a name for it.
Ptosis.
Is that it?
Ptosis. Yeah.
Ptosis. Okay.
Ptosis.
Yeah. Ptosis.
All right. Nicely done. Let's move over to Ibbot.
Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai. I watched a Scooby-Doo cartoon this week, and it totally foreshadowed that I'd be watching Ghost Dog.
Right? Oh, they'd have gotten away with it, too, if it hadn't been for those kids and that stupid dog. Nicely done, everybody. Let's move over to the alternate titles. This was almost called, let's see, Saw Gerrera Becomes a Hitman with a Code. It was a little long. They instead
Wait, Saw Gerrera is a hitman with a code. Well,
that's actually a good point. He is.
Yeah.
Also a leader, though.
Like why do people hate that character, by the way?
I love him. You kidding?
Yeah.
Saw Gerrera is great.
I don't want to talk to these people.
Point him out to me.
I could show you some TikTok videos of some movie reviewers hating this character. And I'm like,
well, they're wrong. They're wrong about it. Just so you know, because he's great. Also, Rogue One's the best movie since Empire Strikes Back. There, I said it. All right. Shogun 2, Life on the Street, it was almost called. Wow. By the way, that Shogun show, really good.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
Can't wait to watch it. Can't wait to start.
Gets real bloody at the end. Some amazing blood effects. I don't know how they did them. Anyway,
is it all wrapped up? Like, is it time for me to binge it?
Not quite. I think there's a finale coming. Okay. I think we're close though. I'm doing the same. I watched the first two and decided to let them pile up so Kim could catch up and we can watch them together. So I'm not entirely sure on that, but soon.
Let's see. 10 episodes. Last one is on April 23rd.
Okay. Oh.
Oh,
well, then
wow.
There are a bunch more then.
Yeah, more than a month.
Jeez. Are they doing...
Damn it, I don't want to wait that long.
Yeah. You can watch Richard Chamberlain get peed on.
Pass.
Let's move on to some texts we got from listeners. This is the number to call or to leave a voicemail and or text. It's 801-471-0462. This one's from Paul Sevilla, who wrote in and says, "Hi, FilmSack. You guys need to sack Safe House from 1998. It's a bonkers movie, and Patrick Stewart is all in on it.
Yeah.
The movie's streaming on YouTube, or excuse me, Tubi. Thanks, Paul. Well, I don't know what that is. Safe House. Never heard of it. Is it good?
It's that. Yeah, you know what? You know who else hasn't ever heard of it? Audra, my significant other.
Okay.
Because you know how many times we've watched this movie? Because
oh, really?
Because she always forgets what's it about. And she's like, oh. I got a movie for us to watch. Okay, cool, cool. It's Safe House. Yeah, we've seen that like three times, Audra. You keep forgetting that we've seen
it. There's like a 2012 one too with Denzel, Ryan Reynolds, Brendan Gleeson, Joel Kinnaman. But this is the 1998 one with Patrick Stewart, Kimberly Williams, Hector Elizondo.
Yeah.
As someone who's seen it three times. Yeah.
There's a 2012, a 2015, and a 1998. It's a lot of safe houses.
A lot of safe houses. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
Patrick
we're talking
Stewart?
About the 2012.
No. Yeah. No. The 98, because that is Patrick Stewart.
The 98 one.
Then now I'm wrong. See, now I have to apologize.
Okay. Yeah. Apologize
I
now.
The 2012.
Patrick Stewart. Hector Elizondo. He's awesome. I'll see this. Why not? This looks all right. It's old.
Yeah.
You see.
Patrick Stewart being a psycho. That's cool.
I'm annoyed by there being different versions. I
think I've actually seen this one too.
Well, then let me tell you about Crash, because boy, howdy. Are there a lot of Crash movies?
Could you not find two different movies with the same title, Crash?
Yeah. Crash is, I don't know, it's like 10 Crashes. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Here's one. We'll put it on the list there, Paul. Thank you for that. We got another one here from, they didn't leave a name, but they said, hey there, Randy, Brian, and Scott. You guys are my favorite sack of anything, and I've been here since the beginning. What a ride, he says. I would like for you guys to sack Midnight Madness. It's right up your alley. Theme gangs, check. Second things, check. I'm not sure what that means. Third thing, because rule of threes. Oh, I guess he's just making
things.
A list.
Yeah, because there's two things, yeah.
Theme gangs is all that matters is what it sounds like to me. But it says it was a great Midnight movie Madness. From my childhood. I love
gangs and end of list.
That's right. He says, I love this movie from my childhood. I love the computer tech in that movie. I haven't watched it in years and years and years and years, but I would rewatch it if you guys were going to sack it.
Tell Randy there's a bunch of caricatures in the front of the cover art. Don't pre-show if you want to know.
Are there? Midnight Madness? Is that what's in there?
Yeah, Midnight Madness 1980.
Let's see.
If you go to the poster art, it's nothing but caricature stuff.
It's very interesting. I love caricatures when they're good. And when they're bad, leap to the defense of the artist.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is that same guy who did stuff for Mad Magazine, but he did like the Animal House.
That was the thing.
Poster. Yeah.
This one's full of stuff.
This is definitely
how do you feel about that Boston Terrier down the bottom left-hand side of that poster?
Yeah, I just know that the guy who's riding the scooter with the Boston Terrier has to be Eddie Deason.
It's got to be. That's him.
It's got to be, right? And then there's one. Is the guy in the top right, he's got to be the dude from Eight Is Enough, the guy holding the woman.
Let's see.
This looks
like it.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Grant Goodeve or something?
I can't remember his name. I never can remember that name.
Oh, sure is Eddie Deason. Look at that.
Is it?
Yeah.
The cover of Animal House is that the same guy? Might be.
It looks like the same guy.
That's not Jack Davis, is it? No. Jack Davis has a way cooler style than this. Yeah. I don't know who that is, but I think you're right. That guy got work
Maude
back
Flanders
then.
Maude Flanders in it.
Yeah. Maude Flanders is in it? Sweet. I wonder if they fired her too.
Rick Meyerowitz
that's
is
the artist
guy who did the Animal House movie poster, and let's see what else he did other work.
Never heard
a lot of stuff for New Yorker, New York Times. They really don't give a list.
That's a bummer.
Yeah,
not other movies and stuff.
No, I'll see if I can find another. There's got to be a like the Rick Meyer Wikipedia all of his right next to the Pigeonpedia. Oh, actually, there is. Yeah, here it is.
Yeah, I could stare at this all the day, by the Animal House one. I could look at it all day.
Yes.
All the shit going on. Oh, I love it.
Let's see illustration. Let's see if it's. He had a book called Drunk Stoned. Oh wow, dude, it's so much art. Yeah, there's like a couple different versions of the Animal House movie poster. I'm scrolling through his work here.
Mm.
Incredible stuff, but I'm not seeing Midnight Madness though.
Yeah, this is the kind of art as a kid I just was so fascinated with.
Yeah. Drunk Stoned, Brilliant Dead.
That's great.
That's the name of that.
Not necessarily in that order, right?
Not necessarily in that order. Yeah.
I always forget that Kevin Bacon was in Animal House.
Yeah.
Chip Diller. I always forget. Don't know why. Just
speaking of houses, anybody's heard anything about this new Roadhouse?
I've heard good things.
It's already streaming, right? Nobody's watched it yet.
Was it already out? Let's see.
I feel attacked. Nobody's watched it?
It's coming March 21st. So this coming week.
Okay, yeah, it was already out. Yeah.
But reviews are out, and the reviews are pretty positive. There are people who they're never going to care because they just are too much of a purist.
It's Roadhouse.
Yeah. But I'm into it. I want to see it. I like Jake Gyllenhaal. I like him ripped, you know?
Yeah.
I like Conor McGregor outside of real life and in fictitious things. he's a big old beefy Irish guy. I like that. Anyway, we'll see how that all turns out. If you guys would like to send us your own texts or emails, filmsack@gmail.com, or you can text us at 801-471-0462. I'd like to welcome some patrons this week, some brand new folks that just joined us. Over at patreon.com/filmsack. Michael Furlong, not related to Edward Furlong, at least as far as I know. Kevin Harris, not related to Richard Harris. These are all movie references. Mariposa, not related to...
Mariposa.
Madam Butterfly.
There you go. That's good.
Well done.
I couldn't think of one. Anyway, they're brand new folks who have joined us, and they are now the recipients of no commercials ever, pre-show content every week, monthly special host episodes, movie-related art print in the mail. I just did a Baron Harkonnen. It's on its way.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Super cool.
It just left. And also other cool stuff. You want to read about it and find out why you should be a patron? Do it today at patreon.com/filmsack. Our next movie is Cowboys and Aliens.
Yeah.
Wow. Both?
That's an ampersand. It's Cowboys, ampersand, aliens.
Oh, right. That's true. Sure. Based on a comic book that is my... I didn't see this because everyone told me the comic was better and the movie was bad, but this is a... who directed Iron Man? Can't think of his name all of a sudden.
Favreau
movie, I think.
Yeah. Always watch
this. This is a John Favreau movie.
Yeah.
I always watch the movie first before you do anything.
Before
I'm disappointed.
Because then the comic's so much better. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that.
Always an upgrade.
I like that idea. I don't have a lot of to say about it ahead of time because I avoided it for the bad reviews, but it's sort of film sack fodder just from the face of it.
I went to the theater and saw it. I it's fine.
Did you enjoy it? You had a good time?
Yeah. I had a good time.
We'll see how it holds up. Where is it streaming, Randy? Do you have that handy?
Netflix.
All right. Everyone go to Netflix. And
Netflix.
We're attempting to like old Harrison Ford. Last time we saw Harrison Ford on FilmSack, we did not like old Harrison Ford.
Yeah, it feels like we were annoyed with old Harrison Ford in Hollywood Homicide. We didn't like that role.
But that was just a hiccup, right?
Yeah.
It was shit.
Well, is what it was. It was shit.
You know, we probably could sack Dial of Destiny at some point.
Oh, I would do that with you guys because I haven't seen it yet. So I would do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm sure it's got its moments.
Saw my mom at the theater.
It's a real bummer because Mangold is one of my favorite directors. And, well, I guess I haven't seen it, so I shouldn't
judge it. Maybe it won't be a bummer. If it's good, you won't be bummed.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed it myself. So.
Did you? Okay. I can't remember what all my friends said, but if you guys liked it, I'll give it a shot.
We're all your friends. We just told
your friends said that they liked
Jesus.
It.
We were the only. I mean, that makes 90% of you. So let's go. Let's do it.
I always try to remind myself, like when it's got a Rotten Tomato score of 50%, that means I'm half likely to enjoy it.
Yeah, you might
half
like
of the,
it.
Half of the
is that what it's at?
Positive.
It's at 50%.
Yeah,
it's just above 50%.
That's audience or critic.
Critics. Yeah, I don't pay attention to audience scores.
Audience, yeah. I do sometimes because the disparity sometimes is interesting. Sometimes.
I weight it. Yeah, it's weighted for me. Yeah. It's like if it's too far apart, I'm like, okay, something's going on here.
Yeah. Yeah, you like to try to figure out what the hell's that's about.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Well, because critics can be very resistant to things that sometimes are new, sometimes they could be resistant. And it's like, oh, we don't like where this is going. And it's like, well, everybody else does. Suck it up.
Yeah. Or things that just they can be out of touch with where audiences are, and same thing the other way. Audiences, aren't refined.
Sometimes audiences like crap.
Yeah.
But that's fine. That's fine.
Sometimes they like crap. Sometimes they don't. Yeah. Well, we like good stuff. So be here next week for another great episode of FilmSack about a movie that may not be great. Cowboys and Aliens on Netflix now. Check it out. FilmSack.com is our website. And if you'd like to support us once again, Patreon.com/FilmSack is the place to go. Leave us reviews wherever you get your shows. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Hagakure.
We'll see you next time.
Get more at frogpants.com.
Ooh.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.